Okay. Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on RenegadeRadio.com. It is the Dark Mark Show. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian. My usual co-host, Hannah, unfortunately couldn't be here. We were here early, and she just couldn't get here. So she'll be back next week. Next week we got a special show. Satanic rapper Knife is coming on, Knife Sotero. So it's a very musical month in September, but...
I don't know how I can compete with that, but I'll try.
Well, no, you definitely could compete with that, because that voice you're hearing right now is the former lead singer of Space Cream, now a solo artist. She's one of the most talented people I know, one of the coolest people I know.
Thank you.
Savannah Pope.
Thank you very much. Could you bring me up a teeny tiny bit?
Sure.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm a vocalist. I need to be heard.
Yeah, she needs to hear herself. And then you brought a friend. You brought Dave. Dave, what's your last name?
My last name is Wolfberg. So Sometimes people call me Wolf.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But you're just going by Wolfberg or Wolf?
Wolf or Dave or Wolfberg or Hey You.
Some people call him Wolfberg Shreds. That's his nickname.
Wolfberg Shreds. Okay.
Or Wolf Shreds. Yeah.
Okay. You're Savannah's guitar player.
Yes, I'm Savannah's guitar player.
Well, we're gonna see how this relationship happened, how you became collaborators. Also, I haven't seen this guy. It's got to be 4 years,
at least.
This man had the good sense to actually feature me in the LA Examiner, do a piece on me. And also is the author of many, many books. Lucy the Werewolf book is one of them. What's your latest book?
Well, the last book that I had out was called Lavender. That was my last foray into erotica. So that was me.
Well, it doesn't have to be erotica, but you're doing horror now?
Yeah, I'm working. I'm actually editing, running through edits on my first horror novel right now. So that's ready to go. I just need to finish the edits. Okay.
Well, I can't wait to hear about that. Yeah. And last time he was on the show, we learned all about sounding, which I never want to talk about again.
Before, sounding?
We'll talk about it after the show. Anyway, I don't want to get into that whole thing again. So before we get started, we've got three sponsors. Real quick, Doomy's Home Cooking. You ever been to Doomy's Home Cooking?
I cannot say that I have.
Dave?
No.
Xavier?
No.
The best vegan food you've ever had. Now they have a Mexican restaurant next door.
Huh.
And you don't have to be vegan. Like, you would never know. They have Philly cheesesteaks. The nachos were one of the 10 best nachos in L.A. I'm amazed at this place. Last time I was there at the vegan restaurant, I had a shrimp po' boy. Amazing. It was great.
Hmm.
If you're in L.A., go to 1253 Vine Street, number 9, in Hollywood, right on Fountain and Vine, right next to where the M-Bar used to be. And they have both Doomy's Home Cooking, the traditional, and Doomy's Next Mex. Last time I was there, I had a... chicken burrito. It was wet. It was delicious. And then we also have Audible. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything on Audible, Xavier?
I don't know if I do or not, but I am very familiar with Audible. I love them.
Yes,
I love Audible.
Oh, well, if you love Audible as much as these two, go to audibletrial.com/DMS for the Dark Mark Show. Free book, free 30-day trial. You don't even have to get a book. Now they got shows.
I recommend Circe is your first book. It is a feminist retelling of the Odyssey from the POV of the first witch.
Well, there you go. And that's free. Just go to audibletrial.com/DMS. Also, we have one more sponsor, Lionel Monroe Hat Company. Check them out on Instagram. Get a hat. Cover your head. Savannah?
Yes.
First time I met you, you came to one of my shows. You weren't coming to see me, but you came to see somebody I was performing with.
Yeah, it was at, CIA. What's that place? CIA, California Institute of the Abnormal Arts.
Yes, abnormal.
It was abnormal. I really like going there because of the cryogenically frozen Pope remains
that
he apparently has. And,
And then we kind of ran into each other here and there. And then... I followed you. I went to see your former band, Space Cream,
mm-hmm.
when they were at the Battle of the Bands to be on the Warped Tour, and won. Beat out all sorts of punk bands. You were not a punk band. And a first question I got to ask, the glasses, the white glasses that are your trademark.
Yeah.
When did you find them?
I can't remember when I found them. A couple of years ago, probably 3 years ago. They're just so much a part of my daily wear at this point. I'm actually
so you weren't wearing them last time I was like when I was, would hang out see you in 2014.
No, in 2014 I was wearing a different pair of vintage white glasses, but they didn't have these double winged, you know, flares. Because
that's kind of in your trademark.
It is, yeah. It's kind of become my trademark to the point where I think I'm going to have them recreated, if I can ever afford that.
Yeah.
by this company in the UK. Just because they're old, you know, they're from the 40s.
Right.
So, you know, I can't expect them to live forever. But.
So, but hopefully soon the Savannah Pope model glasses will be on every store. And it was quite a scene, Xavier, I got to tell you. When I, so was that, 2014?
2014.
Warped Tour is at the House of Blues, and they had all these bands, most of them punk. Some, it was actually a wider assortment of the bands than I thought.
There was punk. There was a lot of like pop metal.
There was a lot of pop metal.
Yeah.
And then this band comes out, and this is who I was coming to see. You come out with a huge wig, mm-hmm. powdered wig, huge thing that I ended up wearing later on tonight. But that's a whole other story. How would you describe your sound then? Space Cream sound.
Well, it was. I mean, it was really a glam band,
right?
Like a '70s Ziggy Stardust glam band, and there were always hints of other stuff. You know, I have like, for instance, Dracula, which a lot of people really liked. Leave Dracula Alone, which was one of our tracks. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit more post-punk or gothy. You know, more into like the Bauhaus vein, but it was always rooted in. And sort of traditional glam,
right,
rock and roll.
But your vocals go beyond the typical glam.
Yeah, the vocals style. I don't know. They get compared to Ann Wilson a lot, which is really mm-hmm. cool. I actually wasn't.
Not too shabby.
It's not too shabby. I'm really flattered. I've become a huge fan of Heart ever since I got that in a couple reviews.
You weren't a fan before?
I wasn't a major connoisseur of Heart. I mean, I always thought Barracuda was badass.
Yeah.
But no, I hadn't really listened through them. And then once I'd heard that a couple times, I made it a point to go listen back through several albums. And man, those Wilson girls.
Yeah.
Oh, God. They're incredible. And apparently, just like one take, apparently they're just genius.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I have a friend who...
Are you one take?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes. If I'm recording for other people, I can do it in a take. Mm-hmm. When I'm doing it for myself, I'm very OCD.
Okay.
So I usually comp
Dave,
out of
Dave,
a
Dave, you want to chime in here?
She's one take. I've seen her do it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, thanks. But for an album, I'll do several and then do a comp.
Make sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But...
But I don't really do auto-tune, which I like.
Well, I would, yeah. If I had your voice, I wouldn't auto-tune either. If I had my voice, I would put on all sorts of auto-tune, but that's just me. But your voice is very soulful.
Thank you.
And I'm sure other people have said that.
Yeah. Well,
it's sort of an R&B voice fronting a rock band.
Huh. That's actually the first time I've gotten that. But I have been mistaken for an African-American woman before someone met me. Like, someone met me and they were like, oh, my God, you're white. And I was like, sorry.
Well, people were perplexed in front of the studios. Two guys came up to you. They didn't know what to do.
Why was that, though? Oh, they just thought I was British.
Was that what they said? Because I had no idea what they were. Two guys come up to her. We're talking. And they're like, excuse me, we have to ask, where are you from? And you're like, from here. And they're like, okay. I'm like, what was that?
No, they were saying, oh, we thought you were from the UK.
Oh, really?
Because they were British.
Oh, okay. Oh, I missed that whole point.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah?
I would have gone to the UK with one of them.
I'm sure you would.
Hey.
Well, I mean, you are
paying. I mean, right? Yeah. Hot.
I'll take your word for it. So, but you are a California girl, but you have the most pale, wonderful skin.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm sort of like a penguin that grew up in the desert. It didn't make any sense.
How do you keep that paleness?
Because
I want every woman out there to figure this one out, because you know how much I like pale skin. Like,
well, no, I mean, there are all sorts of incredible complexions. I love every skin tone. I just, for me, I can't really tan. When I lived in Spain, they always called me Crema, and right. they'd make fun of me because I wouldn't tan. And if I did get a lot of sun, I would just burn. So right. I just have to wear inordinate amounts of sunscreen.
Okay.
And but I still, you know, I still go to the beach and what have you. I just I'm careful about the sun.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think but when I saw you at the Warped Tour thing, you kind of blindsided everybody. People, there were a couple bands that were kind of they brought a large portion of the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were gonna win.
Yeah.
And you guys just blew everybody away.
There were
some good bands.
Yeah. And some people were not happy that we won.
Oh really? Do tell.
Nah, I'm not going to go into it. But, you know, there's always, whenever there's a level of competition involved, people can get a little...
Sour grapes.
A little sour grapes, which, you know, it's a good lesson. It's something that I've you know, all creative professionals
right.
have to sort of go through. And
I've
seen it on myself, and I'm like, oh, it's a bad look.
I was going to say, if one of those bands got it instead of you... After your performance, would have you been a little...
Probably.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, fuck yeah, at the time.
Yes.
God, what was I? I was like 23 and super high. So yeah, definitely.
I didn't know either one of those. So.
Yeah.
So then you end up performing at the Warped Tour. How was that? This was the prize that you won.
It was... You know what? The show at... you know, RIP, the Hollywood House of Blues, was fantastic. You
right.
know, that was just amazing, performing in front of so many people. And
it was one of those where everything just converged on you.
Yeah, everything just kind of came together. And then we got to Warped Tour and we played really early.
Yeah.
And we had just played a show the night before. And then we drove out there and like barely
San Bernardino.
Where was it? I can't remember. It was basically like a massive parking lot.
Right.
And I forgot to put on sunscreen. I got the worst sunburn of my entire life and spent the whole ride home sobbing
oh.
and like feverish while my bass player rubbed aloe vera on me.
Oh.
So, yeah. It wasn't.
So how early were we talking about?
We were on like 11:45. It was 11 early.
In the
morning.
11:45 in the morning.
Oh yeah, we were on early.
And how many people were checking you out?
Not that many. I mean, we were just on too early. Like,
right.
It's so isolated that if you're on after I think one, then there's only one or two stages to go to, so people just kind of converge.
Right.
But then if you're on super early. People are just coming in, so they're yeah. just walking around. So it wasn't very, and you know, you only get like a 20-30 minute set.
So the contest was better than the prize.
Contest was better than the prize. Not that I have anything against Warped Tour. It was just we were on.
No, I know that's you know they've got 300 bands they got to get through.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. But that was funny.
If you ever go to Warped Tour again, your sunscreen.
Well, it's done now.
Oh, that's right.
This
that's
was
right.
the last
done.
One.
Yeah.
Oh, really? It's
yeah,
over?
Yeah, they just had the last one.
It's finally dead.
No, it'll pick back up in a couple years, Dave.
Yeah,
trust
probably.
Me. Trust me. Mm. Everybody.
Also, we were not the right genre for that thing.
Right.
At all. I mean, it was all these like screamo bands that had, and actually when we got there, the guys kept asking me, you know, where's your line out? Where are your plugins? And I was like, well, I have a mic that plugs in. I genuinely didn't know because I'd never used tracks or anything like that. I'd always been such a straight rock and roll
right.
chick. And they were really shocked because everybody there uses tracks and they have, you know, it's kind of these like minor harmonies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, these like screaming and then doing these minor sad harmonies.
So all these screamo and punk bands are using...
It wasn't really punk. It was not punk there. It was very much like screamo and right. like and kind of pop metal.
Okay.
So it was all totally outside of the scene of what I was used to.
Right.
So we were kind of the odd ducks in that situation as well.
Oh, okay. So it was kind of like it's kind of like going to the Rainbow on a Saturday night and hearing pop metal.
Yeah. Exactly.
Except for young people doing it. Anyway, Xavier, I'm glad to see you.
Good to see you.
It's good to see you. When we were talking about erotica before, I was referencing that last I saw you, you were transitioning out of being a big erotica writer, mm-hmm. big in the Bay Area and gay world, and now you had just put out your werewolf novel,
Lily,
mm-hmm. which I've been scouring on Amazon and other review places. Very well received.
Thank you. The erotica thing kind of imploded. There was a moment where the market got super saturated and everybody was writing it and everybody was reading it. And then all of my publishers closed, including The Examiner. So everything went down in a matter of, I don't know, 6 months.
Yeah.
Which gave me this moment to really shed that skin. I had been done writing it for a while. I had one last story that was pretty much 80% done. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get that published. And then once that was published, kind of shed it forever and get back to horror, because no matter how hard I wrote erotica, it always came across as horror.
Yeah.
You know, my publishers would always be like, this
no,
is
no
kind
pun
of,
intended.
This is kind of you writing horror with fucking.
Right.
You're not really writing erotica. You're kind of
your heart was in the horror, not the
That's
not
always the sexiest thing. So.
Right. But I always saw horror and erotica as sisters, you know, or
yeah,
family.
Right.
I never saw them as distinctly separate, but I actually was thinking when you were talking about the Warped Tour, how you realized it wasn't your world, your audience. I went to a convention and had the same experience that you did, where I was sitting on all these panels discussing various aspects of erotica, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden it clicked in my head. I'm like, this is absolutely not anything that I need to be involved in. I think I was looking out in an audience where somebody was dressed as a cat, somebody was dressed as a dog, and they were fighting because they were cats and dogs, pretending to be a cat.
No.
Wow.
And then the panel was about fetish, writing about fetishes in erotica. Mm-hmm. And I suddenly realized that nobody on the panel had ever experienced the fetishes they were writing about. So I had this kind of instinct.
Except for you.
Except for me. Well, if I was going to write about it, I would have experienced it.
Yeah.
So I had this illusion, like maybe you did. And I wonder if you had the same experience, where all of a sudden the curtain parted and I was like, this is like the man behind the curtain. Nobody really knows what they're talking about here, and they're just writing about their fantasies, where I've lived a rather erotic life. And if I was going to write about a certain thing, I would know about it. Mm-hmm. So I thought everybody was doing that. And so I don't know if you had that moment where you're like, wow, this was like a kind of Wizard of Oz, the moment where you're like, there's the man behind the curtain kind of.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't. Yeah.
Well, I can relate to you. I can relate to both your stories, because you were asking me how it was in Vegas, mm-hmm. and doing comedy in Vegas. What works and let me just preface this by saying, once you've established yourself, your audience goes to you in Vegas.
Right.
I had not established myself yet, so I was going to the audience. The audience was not, it was not where I wanted my comedy to go.
Right.
And I could feel it regressing, which is why I'm back in L.A., where I could be.
Is there much of
creative.
A goth scene in Vegas?
It's a little bit.
Yeah.
Me and a couple other people, that's it. No, but there's a couple of
him and Pia Zadora.
Actually,
four people dressed in black in the middle of the desert.
I never
penguins in the desert. See,
I never found the goth scene in New Orleans. Oddly enough, I know it was. I know it's there.
Oh, I forgot you moved there. I remember.
I moved to New Orleans first, and then I moved to Vegas.
I never saw much of a goth scene in New Orleans either. I only found one rock bar there, but I was only there. I've only been there sporadically because my cousin lives out there.
It's a lot of rock bars, but
mostly jazz bars.
Yeah, mostly jazz bars, but you can find some. And there's rock nights at the jazz bars.
Right, but I meant like there was only one old school rock and roll bar.
Well, you know what's big there now is karaoke, oddly. Sadly enough, so. So you're out. So you got out of the erotic writing,
right?
And so so these tales, you were kind of transitioning last time I talked to you, because you like to set things in the past,
right?
You like historical horror. So so after Lily, what did you do?
You know, after Lily, I wrote. So what happened was, after all of my publishers closed, I had to kind of rethink what I was going to do. I decided that the stories were worth. I would just wanted them out in print, so I started submitting them to other publishers. They all got republished. Lily is now in its third
publication.
Wow. And then Lavender got picked up, and that went out fairly quickly. And then two publishers came in and kind of just started taking all of my back catalog and republishing it. My full novel, Velvet, which was a historical erotica, came out again in print, which was nice to see that. And it was really just refreshing to be able to let it go and to go back into the story that I'm editing now, which is going to be a trilogy. It was so freeing for me to delete all of the sex scenes that I can't write the word cock or cum, or I just can't write it again. Do you know what I mean? It's not where my writing is. Mm. I kind of, like you with, and you, I kind of kept forcing myself to fit this square peg into a round hole. And I was like, why am I doing this? Because every time you're doing that, the shavings from the grind are taking more and more away from what you're really trying to do.
I'm curious if, because I've read this in the foreword of, I think it's called Little Birds, one of the Anais Nin books, which we were actually talking about earlier. It says that the more she wrote about sex, because she was getting paid for it, the more it became a job, the less erotic it became. Like, it actually sort of desexualized.
God, that happened to me a long time ago. I think when I was working in porn, and I went to my first porn set, and I saw a woman being double penetrated on a couch while another woman was eating guacamole out of a bowl, like half an inch away from her watching. It was possibly the most...
Dave, cover your ears, will you?
It was probably the most unsexual experience of my life, and I found nothing erotic about it.
Not even the guacamole?
And that's what I remember.
Everybody loves avocados.
And they loved it. I
said avocado, I saw a light go on, but we'll skip that for now.
I just found all of it. You know, I've always worked in either sex or food or in writing. Those have been my three kind of passions. And you reach a point with the sex where you're just like, I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to be around it. I mean, because you just reach a point where you're like, I'm good. I've seen everything I need to see.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. So what you're saying is, was it desexualized? Absolutely. Right. And then you become even more bitter when you realize the people who are reading it or the other people who are writing it, most of them are not living what they're writing. And I don't know why I had that misconception. That's kind of a big misconception. I kind of assumed the woman who wrote 50 Shades of Grey, I kind of had this idea that she might have lived some of that. And of course she didn't, or maybe she did, I don't know. But, you know, I had a woman confront me at a book signing where she said, well, you know, we're writers, we make stuff up. She goes, there's no vampires. So I said, yes, but if there is one, I'm going to assume they know more about being a vampire than I do.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and you're gonna fuck him, and then write a book about it.
Well, the woman with 50 Shades of Grey, I don't know if she knows about S&M, but the white wine with ice—that's from her life. You know that.
The white wine with ice.
We were talking about it.
Please tell me you didn't read.
No. We were talking. I was talking to Savannah outside. She's like, "It's some part where he shows up with white wine with ice." I'm like, maybe that's part of the torture.
Yeah, my friend. I have a friend, and we like to go to the discount theater in Pasadena and see movies once they've been out for a while. We did that with all the 50 Shades of Grey. Honestly, after the first one, we got real depressed because in the second one, he's like, I'm only into you because you look like my mom. And we were like, can't come back from that, dude.
So did you guys know that 50 Shades is Twilight fan fiction, which makes me want to scream even more?
Huh. I did know that. I checked it out from the library, but I didn't get around to watching it. I'd watch it. I'm curious. But
it was truly... Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what? I thought the sex scenes were pretty good, but... The dialogue and the plot was so ludicrous.
Oh, I can imagine.
And the dude is so insane, and you're always like, this dingus is going to murder this bitch.
So it's kind of like a Lifetime movie.
It's kind of like a Lifetime movie. I mean, there's that saying, you know, if Christian Grey lived in a trailer rather than in a, you know, rather than owning a building, then it would just be an episode of Criminal Minds.
Basically, yeah. Now, can you make a living as a writer?
I don't know in that genre if you can. I mean,
just period.
In general?
Like, yeah.
I don't know. I've done, you know, I haven't been able to completely support myself on my writing, but that would be my goal eventually. I don't know. Because now I'm kind of back in the beginning of all of it and trying to see what it's going to be like in the horror genre. I mean, next time you're in Pasadena, come and call me because I live in there, and I'll come and see a cheap movie with you.
Oh, that sounds great.
I mean, I think what bothered me about 50 Shades and even Twilight, and this relates back to something that you were saying too, is I think you know, 50 Shades comes out and all of a sudden it's like they invented erotica. And then you go to Target and they're like, well, if you loved 50 Shades, you'd love these books. And it's the Sleeping Beauty books from Anne Rice, which came out in 1978, right, and are genius. Probably the only erotica I've ever read.
Really?
I think they're beautifully done. And I'm not a huge fan of her even, mm-hmm, but that erotica was really well done. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Well, they definitely play with submission and domination.
Right.
That's the whole
but
thing.
But it kind of is like, well, you know, like when Twilight come out, they're like, have you ever heard of Dracula? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Please don't even compare.
You don't even know. Bram Stoker.
Yeah. Ugh. You know, so they act like this came out and invented the vampire genre.
That's just amazing that somebody from Team Edward didn't know who Dracula was.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Wow. But what are you going to do? I have seen the Twilight movies. That's neither here nor there. I've seen actually you be glittery on occasion.
Glittery?
Very glittery.
Yeah. I don't see how you came.
That's one of my patented bad segues. Now, what happened? What?
That was really a non sequitur.
No, no. I remember. I think I saw you. I saw you perform once. So you were very glittery.
Yeah. I put glitter on.
Yeah. But what happened?
What?
I strain for these segues, but.
Saying that I'm basically?
You might be a vampire
because the vampires from Twilight have glitter on.
Yes. See, Dave got it. Dave got it. Now what happens?
That was a deep cut.
Yeah. Yes. So what can I? That's not so to speak. Yes. Yeah. No pun intended. But yeah. What happened to Space Cream? What happened?
You know, it was actually Dave was in Space Cream for a minute.
Were you?
Uh huh. Yeah.
Yes, I was.
Yes. Space Cream. It was great, and it completely changed the way that I write music and that I perform. So I'm really grateful for it.
Because the Space Cream that I saw, the version, were three gentlemen that were considerably older than you.
No, there was one guy who was young, who was like a pretty boy.
Okay.
There was one gentleman who was a cross-dresser, and then there was my roommate who was considerably older than me and a really, really gifted songwriter and great guitar player. And we were partners for years, and then that just could, you know, things change.
Right.
We're still close. And then I had a bunch of young guys for a while, and then it just... As soon as that one started to that iteration of it with the three young dudes who I all still love.
Yeah. This is the guy that one of the young dudes.
There were three guys. There was Danny Hector, who's kind of a fixture in LA. He plays a ton of like the cover gigs, you know, Sunset Jam, and he tours with a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. There was this guy, Zach Ryan, who I don't even know what Zach's doing now. He's a funny, he's a kooky bird. And then Saul, who now works in the gourmet food industry. He's actually kind of like a food connoisseur and a professional food connoisseur.
Right.
So there were the three of us, and it was great. And it was just always my baby.
I was going to say. That's the thing. I mean, what's the difference between that and this? I mean, you're the star.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's great to collaborate with people, and I still do. But I'm always like, I'm the lyricist. I'm, you know, I always have the visual ideas. And I always kind of, I'm very Warholian about my music and my approach to art. Not in that I make shitty screen prints, but in that I have
you try to make it an experience.
Yeah. I have a concept, and I want it to be really holistic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, unless you guys all went to like high school together and you all had the same thing, you know, you're all like, I want to be in a glam band, which, you know, how many other people my age would ever want to do that? It's just not going to happen. So eventually just had to, you know, every now and then it's like the universe does for you what you can't do for yourself. It's like, look, bitch, look. And eventually I just had to recognize that I was trying to force something that wasn't meant to happen. And I was really, really glad that I'd had those experiences and that it had, I mean, Space Cream kind of just happened.
Right.
And so I'm really grateful for it. But then it just eventually became clear to me that it was just me.
Well, I Googled Space Cream. I didn't know there was an actual real Space Cream, but,
What do you mean? Oh, you mean the weed?
Yeah, I did too. Yeah.
That happened after the band, actually. And it is one of the reasons that I was very glad that I copyrighted the name.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but Space Cream, the weed, is two words, and Space Cream, the band.
Okay, so you don't
get
residuals.
I do not get residuals.
And I read something about you that I find hard to believe.
Okay.
In this school, did you go to reform school?
Yeah.
There's such a thing as reform school
now? Well, it was like
it sounds like a 1940s thing. Like, hey, Toots, you know.
That's just the way that I phrased it to people because it's a super simplistic thing that people can grasp. But yeah, it was a school for wayward teens.
Okay.
It's not like I was arrested and sent there. That's
what I was trying to figure out.
No, I wasn't.
I was getting Linda Blair visions. I didn't know what the hell you were doing. Reform school. What the hell?
No. I was, I was sent away because, you know, I was a crazy kid.
Were you really?
Yeah.
I find that hard to believe.
Really?
No, I don't know. I didn't think you were that bad.
No, I mean, I'm great now. I just, Now, you know, now I have creative outlets, so everything goes into that.
Okay, is that what it was?
So, but I, you know, as a kid, I didn't have that, and I was super anxious and depressed, and I ran away all the time, and I've always been a fantasist, you know what I mean? I was always, my head was always in the clouds, and I was always kind of blending reality with, not in a schizophrenic way, but, you know, I was so wrapped up in narratives and stories that it was really hard for me to kind of get by as a traditional kid, and I was made fun of constantly. And so I was just really, really unhappy, and I fought with my parents all the time, and they never knew where I was.
Right.
And, you know, just like...
Another thing that I found hard to believe is that you don't have any vocal training.
Mm, that's true.
That you sang along with records, and that's how you developed your voice.
Yeah.
Dave, I've never heard anything like this. I mean, you study guitar.
Well, I don't think Freddie Mercury had any vocal training.
Some people just have it.
Yeah,
and other people like me have to go to school to learn it.
Right. Did you go to school?
Yes.
Musicians Institute or?
No, I went to Berklee in Boston.
Oh, even better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. So you know what you're doing.
I hope so.
Wolfberg shreds.
No, I'm sure. But I mean, you went to people that were studying to be vocalists.
Well, my... go on.
And then this is just a natural that sings along with records.
Yeah, of course. In any industry, I think, but music especially, there are people that come in and they just get it. They just have it and they've heard the records and they absorbed whatever they needed to absorb to just get the thing, whatever that metaphysical thing of being able to grab music out of thin air is. And yeah, she just has it. So that's something I always envied about her.
Right.
Aw.
What records were you singing to?
I grew up, I was really obsessed with Joni Mitchell as a kid. That was probably my first love musically.
Right.
And just such a unique voice and hitting those highs. And I could do that. I figured out how to do that. And then... Let's see, what else did I sing along to? I mean, the Beatles, you know? I grew up with a lot of kind of run-of-the-mill.
Well, what I'm saying is, I mean, the stuff you were singing to didn't have the range of what you're singing now.
Let's see. A lot of my favorites had crazy range. So Aretha.
Yeah, okay.
Sly and the Family Stone.
All right.
Joni Mitchell, who definitely has the fucking range.
Sure.
I mean, I mean, those were my three main favorite vocalists. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was a little kid, I was into stuff like Christina Aguilera, you know?
Who wasn't?
You know, yeah, exactly. You know, we used to do Genie in the Bottle videos on our
The song that made me want to play guitar when I was 5 years old was Backstreet Boys' Larger Than Life. Ah. If you listen to that song, it has the most insane guitar solo you'll ever hear.
Really? Larger Than Life? I got to check that out.
No one ever realizes it because they maybe don't listen that far into the song. But after that bridge, it's one of the most burning solos ever.
And really?
It made me want to pick up a guitar.
Yeah, it's like Van Halen playing on an MJ track. Exactly. People don't notice it, but you're like, fuck.
Well, people notice that. I mean, do you know who was playing on that one?
Yeah, that's Eddie Van Halen on Beat It.
I don't want Beat It, but on the Backstreet Boys.
Actually, it took me a bunch of research to even find out who recorded it, but it was... The famous songwriter that we all know and love is Max Martin, and he's written all of our favorite songs, you know, by NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys, and even up to Taylor Swift now.
Yeah.
And probably just some Swedish dude is the answer. Is like whoever his friend at the time was who he could call and say, hey, come down and shred on this track. Mm. But maybe I'm wrong. If you're out there, you know, hit me up.
I'm gonna research this.
It's the girl, the dragon tattoo.
Who played guitar on that?
Ninja.
Yeah, who played guitar on Larger Than Life? Yeah, maybe, who knows? Maybe
Max fucking Martin.
Like Yngwie Malmsteen or somebody. Who knows?
Well, right.
Who knows? Anyway.
I have a lyric about Max Martin in one of the songs on my EP that's coming out in a couple months.
Really?
Yeah.
What would that be?
Well, I don't want to reveal the lyric because it reveals too much about the song. But essentially, it's the song's about the death of the rock industry, rock music industry, and Max Martin makes an appearance, and he's like, "What's your problem? You're fine."
Oh, okay.
He's like, "Why are you bothering with this?"
Which
like,
is
Max
great.
Martin, you don't get it.
I've heard he's a nice guy, so that seems to line up.
So do you think, I mean, obviously.
Oh, I'm sure he's a lovely dude and he's brilliant.
Obviously, the record industry is not what it used to be.
No.
But do you think rock is dead? Everybody's saying that.
Well.
I mean, you're trying to keep it alive.
I think rock is undead. I think rock was always dead. Yeah. That's sort of the point of rock.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think the rock industry is fucked. When you have something like, and you know, I'll probably regret this if I ever get super successful, but when you have something like Imagine Dragons winning rock awards, then shit's gone to pot. But
but if you look at a lot of the greatest rock records that we all know and love now, it's not as if they were winning tons of awards.
That's true.
That they came out.
Well, I mean, the thing is, the rock used to be what was played on the radio. That was it. I mean, it was all the top 10 songs were
rock. Right, but if you listen to a lot of like the greatest hits on the radio, it's not necessarily the stuff that's like timeless and that really gets to you. You know, it was sort of the pop of rock.
Right.
That at the times that you hear on, you know, like greatest hits.
Sure.
So I just think it takes a longer time if you're just a little bit out of the norm.
Right.
So I'm going to chime in here on this one.
I
have so I'm really into music history, and I've spent a lot of time nerding out about just different periods of time.
Well, let's nerd out.
The entire history of Western music from when Gregorian chant became actual readable lines of music to when Bach actually tempered all 12 notes and gave us...
We don't have to go back that far.
Okay, great. So
the chromatic scale.
Here's the point of me saying all this. There has always been and will always be crap. And we haven't heard, you know, the crap from the 16th century because no one wrote it down because it wasn't worth hearing. And we don't hear the crappy songs like that we're playing on the radio. You know how many songs Madonna
but wait a second.
Has? Like, we haven't heard all
but
of
wait
them.
A second. Maybe we are hearing the crap from the 16th century. Maybe the stuff that it was popular, that's now, maybe Bach and Beethoven and all that shit, maybe that was the shit. And then there was like this underground, like glam symphonic music, like this punk symphonic music that's way better.
I wouldn't doubt that. That's entirely possible. But we'll never know, certainly.
Maybe like the Gregorian chants were the shit, and then there was like this amazing...
Well,
goth
actually,
chanting.
Well,
that...
well, for instance, you have something like, I mean, this isn't music, but you have Shakespeare and Marlowe, for instance. And at the time, Marlowe was like the Taylor Swift of literature.
So does that make Shakespeare Imagine Dragons? Or what
no. I think Shakespeare was a little, it took him a longer time right. to get somewhere.
Right.
You know, he was sort of a, I mean, obviously by the end of his life, he was so famous that he had his own theater, but it just took a longer time for him to get an audience. And now he's the one that people remember. So it's just, you know, it's.
Let's bring a writer in because some people say he didn't write his own play. Some people say that a bunch of different people wrote those plays.
I heard he was bi.
I've heard that too. Do you know about Shakespeare? Can you chime in on this?
You know, I think
a lot of mysteries.
I don't think anybody will ever really know. I mean, every time something came out about, I can't think of the name of the artist with the Keen. Was it Keen? The big eyes, the paintings with the kids with the big eyes.
Oh,
that the wife
yeah.
is really doing it. And I mean, there's all these, everything comes out that somebody else is really doing it. And I don't know. I don't know that it matters. I think eventually history, you know, makes its own tales and lies. And, you know, by the time we hear it, it's become like a folklore. And mm-hmm. You just have to roll with it. I mean, I think I recently like geeked out again on Fleetwood Mac, which is one of my favorite. And on a side note, I'm a huge Heart fan, and they're actually feuding right now, and it kind of breaks my heart.
Oh, Heart, yeah. The
girls
sisters,
are feuding,
yeah.
and yeah. so I've seen both of them a number of times, but like you said, there's a ton of Fleetwood Mac music that you don't hear that really isn't great.
Yeah, you're not
you know
going to hear
I mean?
Tusk on the radio.
Yeah,
right. Well, no, and then so, there's the old blues Fleetwood Mac you never hear.
Right, and there's some good stuff in there, too, but there's, you know, there's a lot that you don't hear.
Well, here's an interesting story that actually I was reminded of. There was a composer, most of the time in the old days, it was either for Christianity or for the aristocracy.
If right.
You either had to hire musicians to write for you because you had money or because you were the church and you were glorifying whatever. So there was this prince,
whatever, God.
There was this prince Fucker. In Italy called Gesualdo, and he was
Where
just,
is he?
He was, he, well, this was in the 1500s.
I'm good, go ahead.
Long dead, but...
Or is he?
At the CIA.
Right. The CIA got him. So he was
the NSA was on his
back. The worst Where's Waldo joke I've ever done.
He was allowed to write anything he wanted because he was the aristocracy. So he got to write anything. So he wrote some of the weirdest, darkest, creepiest music that you could ever imagine.
Waldo.
Gesualdo. And it preceded some of the most brilliant music of the 20th century by almost 500 years.
Wow.
And that was just because he was allowed to write whatever he wanted.
Right.
He also killed his wife because there was a law in Italy where if your wife cheated on you, you were allowed to murder her. And I think this was still a law until like 1975.
Oh, lovely.
Just that's
anecdote.
Wonderful. Well, you know, I would argue that there's a similar system to that right now where people can make a lot of incredible art because they're on their own, but they don't have the resources to get it out there. Mm. Whereas, you know, there is a system that is sort of like the aristocracy and that it's just fueling stuff like pure pop.
Right.
You know, that's music for the masses.
Definitely.
That's very, very accessible. And I'm not saying I don't have any problem with pop. It's just, it doesn't like hit me the way that other types of music hit me sometimes, except, you know, well, actually, you know, there are some pop musicians that really get to me, but it's not always based in the same kind of need for depth that you can get in other genres of music a little bit more easily.
Well, speaking of depth, tell me about the new EP, and then could you please sing something?
Sure.
Yes. Well, tell me about the new EP first.
And then can I pee? I have to run and pee so you can... You guys can talk about.
Did you want to run a pee now and then?
No, I'll pee later.
Okay, well,
I'll use it.
Because the show's running to an end, so it'll be like, and then you can pee all you want.
All right, pee all day.
Okay.
Okay. So the new EP. Well, first of all, I have a single coming out on September 21st called Creature.
And I'm going to go to the show.
Yeah, the show's at the Study. And there are discount tickets online, and it's going to be a really crazy show. And it's for a music video that I spent a year on.
Yeah.
Well,
your shows are always crazy. You make sure that the crowd is
I make thing. Sure the shows are crazy, but this one's really, really personal to me because this video is so... Man, it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
It was a lot of work, and it's a lot of really, really...
Well, what took a year?
Okay, so I had these incredibly... absurd visuals in my head that if I had wanted to do with a studio would have cost many hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I have like, you know, $300 in my checking account. So that's not going to happen. So I learned motion graphics, and I learned about like animation and special effects. And I shot with a green screen. I have friends who are camera operators. I have friends who are makeup artists. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of called in a ton of favors. I used every resource that I could muster. So we shot it on green screen, and then, but because it was my first time shooting on green screen, we made a lot of mistakes.
Right.
As a result, I had to do a lot of frame by frame keying.
Oh.
So, I mean, it was thousands and thousands and thousands of frames with like hundreds of points on each that had to change each time.
Right.
So it was, you know, I made it mini second by mini second.
Wow.
And each frame is really complex. You know, the animations really, yeah, they're pretty ambitious. It's a really ambitious thing. And then I work at a post house, so I was able to get help from people I work with and just say, okay, hey, can you make sure this is, you know,
post production
above the line? Yeah, like, can you just make sure this is nobody's gonna laugh at it, and that's gonna be really beautiful. And I had, you know, I got a lot of great input from people, and some people helped me out and took it home, and so it came at the production value is really, really high, and the visuals are, I think, pretty unprecedented, and it's just a bitchin' song.
It's great.
And then it's, you know, great. It's heavier than anything I did with Space Cream.
Well, I was gonna say, what's the difference between Savannah Pope and Space Cream?
It's just more freedom. Yeah. I can play around with a lot of stuff. Space mm-hmm. Cream, I mean, with a name like Space Cream, you can only be sort of like a gimmicky glam band. Yeah, now I can play with a lot of stuff.
They said that to the Imagine Dragons, and look what happened.
Oh, man, you did not like my dig on Imagine Dragons.
No, I don't give a shit. I don't care less. I'm
sure they're lovely guys, and I'm sure their stuff is good. I just don't think it's rock.
I'm honestly very, very... Imagine Dragons strikes me like Dave Matthews Band. It's like, it's there. I don't dislike it. I don't like it.
That's
it's
exactly like, how yeah. I feel about it. The only thing that offends me about it is that it keeps getting...
awards.
Accolades for rock, and I'm like, it's not a fucking rock band.
Right, it's just like there's music like that. Just like, it's there. I have no opinion about it whatsoever. It doesn't. I'm not vomiting, but I'm not cheering. But your music is different.
Mm-hmm.
Can we sing a song?
Yeah.
What song did you? Well, Dave's gonna get this guitar.
Well, we'll do one of the songs off the new EP, which is coming out in November. It's called Rock and So. This EP, it was really fun. I got to play around with some sadder concepts, but put them to rock and roll. And I was able to, it was very cathartic for me.
Right.
So this is another song that's sort of about that.
Too put
much?
This on for you,
no, I'm not going to do headphones.
Okay.
Yeah, it's another song that's sort of about the death of the music industry. It's about somebody who, it's about constantly being told that the only way I was going to make it was to write pop music, and just being told that I need to do things very differently over and over.
And what's the song called?
Rock and Roll No More.
Okay.
Ready?
Mm-hmm. Get a job at the studio and wallow in the bar. Ain't no fucking freeload freak like you gonna be a star. Hey, send entrance exams and jam your head with rules. You could be on NPR. You had finished school. I'd rather be a wicked child like Bowery, Byron, Oscar Wilde, glitter queen of gutter lore. But nobody loves rock and roll. Nobody loves rock and roll. Nobody loves rock and roll. Hang me with a Les Paul string and drown my flesh in ink. Ready your air hole as I float across the kitchen sink. Let me up and I'll slip through the drain, a small Viking. Setting fire to all of my pipe dreams. I'd rather let my voice ring out, get high on that midnight crowd. Oh, how the stadium kids would roar, but nobody loves rock and roll. Nobody loves rock and roll. Except me, I love a mean 12-string harmony, not some auto-tune lobotomy. Culture can be saved if we let the golden age of our pedigree. So come on, turn up your car stereo and sing along. Hear every lack, every lyric of this song. Let me play with your mechanics. Don't you panic, baby. Let me turn you on. Can you feel it? I can feel it. Can you feel it?
It's amazing. Every time I hear her sing, it's amazing.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Yes. Anyway, where does the time go? What a great show.
Are we done?
Almost. Xavier, real quick, tell us about the book that's coming out.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, just the conversation.
Yeah, no. All my stuff's available online on Amazon. Just search my name, Xavier Axelson. Everything's right there.
And the trilogy's Xavier coming Axelson. Out?
Yeah, probably next year. The trilogy's called The Elementals.
Ooh. Intrigued already. And Dave?
You can find me on Instagram at Wolf Shreds.
Wolf Shreds. You're fantastic. And it's about every time you sing, I fall in love with you. Tell me.
Thank you.
Tell me how people can get a hold of you and how you can.
You can find me online at SavannahPopeMusic.com or any social media vein, really, at I Am Savannah Pope.
And if you're listening to this in time, on Renegade Radio or iTunes or what have you. Your video release party is September 21st at the...
September 21st at the Study.
At the Study. Mm-hmm. And the EP will be out...
In November.
Yeah. And it'll be on all the outlets. Will it be physical?
There will be physical as well.
Oh, okay.
The single will be out on September 21st. So check it out and check out the video called Creature on YouTube.
Right. Oh, I've checked that. I've checked out the preview. I haven't.
Nobody's seen it yet.
Yeah, I checked out a little preview and the single will be on Spotify and all these other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Because I was trying to look up your stuff there and there's nothing there yet.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's all space gray.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Anyway. Oh, what a fun time. And a goth comedian on all social media. Everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.